For those who have already developed the training of the mind, yeah, you can just slowly mindfulness, yeah, mindfully come out of meditation, yeah, trying to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness and the silent state of mind that you have developed and trained for as long as you can. You got to carry this mind state into your daily life, into all activity. Yeah. Unless your daily mindfulness is very stable, you cannot be in a state of heedfulness in the midst of life. And Dhammapada verse 21 is very clear. Unless you are heedful, you are as if dead. That's why heedfulness is very important. To be heedful is to be ever mindful, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. And this is a full-time training in the midst of life. Then the other thing about meditation is, if you don't build up your mindfulness, you straight away see it's not so effective. But you try some bowing, walking, or even relaxed type of contemplative, at-ease type of walk. Don't stress yourself, don't try to focus or do it, just relax and walk. Free your mind, free your body. Allow it to settle down naturally. Then this mind will quiet down. Then that mindfulness, even 5 to 10 minutes, is very useful. Then when you sit, become very simple. Your sitting become very different. You settle down very fast. The mind silent very fast. It's like you no need to train, you straight away go in, the silent mind is there. Or even if you have not done it for before, you just silent. Then you realize the thinking is so much less because you are in a state of relax, at ease, peaceful. So meditation is just to develop the mindfulness. To develop the mindfulness is very easy. You walk, relax, state. Just walk, no pressure, nothing. But be mindful of all the movement, activity with inner awareness. With every action, every movement, your hand movement. Initially, you try to allow your awareness be with it, but it's not continuous because you haven't trained. But after a while, when your thinking slows down or less thought, then you realize your awareness is automatically with your movement, with your activity. Then when you walk, your whole leg movement, you can feel the movement, the stretching, the turning, the bending, and whatever activity you do. Then your blinking of your eye, you are fully aware, and how your hand move, how your leg move. Your awareness is vivid. And this is what training is all about. When you train to be aware, you don't try to know, you just do until the mindfulness come. And you will know, your form and mind will know what the sati is, because during that time, there is no thought, just your body and mind move as one. Then everything is like in harmony. So that training is very important. It's not difficult. It's just like learning how to play a game or learning how to ride a bicycle. When you are graceful, skillful, everything becomes automatic, no need to think. Spontaneously you can do because you have developed the training, the skill. So initially is to train until that mindfulness come. Then when the mindfulness is there, meditation become very easy. Just relax. The silent mind will come back very fast. Okay? So now we go to the next program. 10:30 to 12, question and answer, come meditation reporting, followed by Dhamma sharing via review of the Heart Sutta notes. So if you have any meditation reporting, you can raise your hand or pass me the question. Then we can discuss it before we go into the Heart Sutta. Anybody? Anybody got any meditation reporting? Don't have. Okay, then we turn to Heart Sutta, chapter 2. chapter 2. Yeah. Hans Sutta, chapter 2, page 4. The 10 perfection or the 10 paramitas under the Theravada tradition are Dana, Sila, Nikama, Panya, Virya, Kanti, Satya, Adhitana, Metta, and Upeka. So the English equivalent is Dana is generosity. These are your perfection, your parami, which you need to cultivate them until it's fully perfected. Like generosity, the act of kindness, goodness, generosity. Like when you are very generous, you have this generosity to donate, to help out, to help people, to help society, to help bring about a better world, a better world consciousness. So all these are generosity, the gift of materialistic possession or wealth. Then the second one is the gift of life or organ and all those things. Then the third one, which is the highest, is the gift of truth. So there are three categories of giving. And giving can be perfected at many levels. You give with sincerity, with understanding, because you are very sincere. You just want to relieve suffering. You want to bring about good condition for people to have a better life. And the law of karma is such, the more you give, the fruition of it is the more you receive. When you give, in karma, it's like that. You give to your nature. You understand that or not? Yeah? When you give to your karmic nature. Because whatever you give, come back to you. If you have generosity, that parami will give rise to condition for you to receive. Yeah, this is how you give. During the Buddha's time, the Buddha mentioned many of this. He said one of the disciples, he used to give a lot of warm clothing. So if you go to a remote place where there is extreme temperature or weather, you better bring this monk along, he said, because he got parami. And when he is there, he will receive. Then you heard of Sivali, very generous, the monk, Sivali. So every time he received wealth or money, he will donate. Then when he has, he will donate. So Sivali, some tradition, even Thailand, they like to pay respect to Sivali because they believe a lot of wealth will come their way. But you must have that parami. It's not to say you pay respect or make offering to Sivali, you will receive what he received. No. It is the way he understands the law. Then morality, sila, is also a very important parami. That's why I say when you cultivate this sila, morality, which is precepts, it is a perfection. It can bring forth limitless merits. And this is virtue. And when you have sila, it brings forth a lot of benefit. Virtue, like the Buddha said, is your highest protection. Nothing protects you in this world except virtue. When you have goodness, kindness, you are incapable of negativity. The fruition of it is you will not entangle yourself with all those negativity. That's why it protects you very well. Then, like we chant this morning, Silena Sukanti Nyanti. So, precept is the source of spiritual joy, spiritual happiness. This is very important. That's why you must keep your precept, your morality, and perfect them. And it's a training rule where you train yourself to observe this precept, not to violate, not to bring about karmic negativity, so that your nature will grow, your nature will progress. So in life, the Buddha said, if you want to improve your life, it's very simple. Follow his advice. Avoid all evil. Purify the mind. Then do whatever wholesomeness. Yeah? Avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. To avoid all evil is to keep your precept. To do good, cultivate noble eightfold path. Then purify your mind also is part of noble eightfold path. So when you have these precepts, you will have all this quality. It's the source of spiritual joy, spiritual wealth, and spiritual peacefulness of mind. These are very conducive mind state for you to progress along the path of Dhamma in the meditation. Then your life will improve. The moment you take care of this, you take care of karma. When you take care of karma, karma take care of your life. That's how you improve your life. If you want to change your life, no amount of feng shui can help you, I tell you. You take care of karma, your life become different. You follow the advice of the Buddha, your life become different, beautiful. So in order to bring about good understanding for you to benefit from this cultivation, you must understand that this Dhamma is a very, very beautiful teaching that can transform your life, that can bring about great understanding to improve your life tremendously. And you can even develop the understanding and wisdom to free your mind, liberate your mind from all mental suffering or misery or unhappiness. Then your mind state is always peaceful, full of serenity, quietness, tranquility, stillness, and joy. Then you have a lot of understanding. This is heedful living. This is wisdom living, wise living. Then your mind is no longer like before. It doesn't entangle anymore. So from precept, everything comes. Without precept, nothing comes. Yeah? That's the reason why the Buddha in his teaching, he always stress upon this two essential Dhamma. He said, Sila, Samadhi, Panya. And this is basically what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. He said, when you cultivate morality, Sila, it will set the base for Samadhi to kick in. So Samadhi is the collectedness of mind. Collectedness and unwavering mind. So Sila, Samadhi, and Panya is wisdom. So without Sila as a base, your mind is not peaceful. There is no joy. There is no spiritual understanding. So when Sila is there, you got less problem. Then you got more condition, more conducive mind state for you to meditate. That's why when you have less karma problem based on violation of precept, so your mind is more calm, more peaceful, because you got less problem in life. Then you can settle down. You can develop the meditative mind, which is sati and samadhi. Yeah. So when sati and samadhi arise, the mind becomes collected and unwavering. Means at the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel something or think, the mind does not waver, does not stir, does not react. That's why you will not have this duality or what they call mental hindrance or sensual desire and ill will. Your mind is always at peace with spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, peacefulness, and awareness within. Then because it has this sati and samadhi, so this samadhi is actually combination of sati and samadhi. So when you have sati and samadhi, you can see things as they are. That's how you insight into phenomena and develop the wisdom. Then the Buddha said, this is Noble Eightfold Path, because this one is equivalent to Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path got eight path factor. First path factor is right view. Right view can only come about when there is right understanding or wisdom. That's why the first path factor is always the wisdom factor. They call it right view. Then when your view is right, you will be able to arise the right thought, right speech, right action, and the way you live your life, right living. So all this fall into place. So when it comes to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood or right living, it's the morality part, the virtue part. Then after that, the four right effort is also part of cultivation. But the right effort is thought-based. So it is at the thought level. It's still part of sila. That's why right thought. So the four right effort, the first right effort is right effort to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has arisen. Then the right effort to prevent them from arising. When you have wisdom, understanding, you have mindfulness, you can deal with it, then you can prevent it from arising. Then the other two right effort, the third and the fourth, is right effort to cultivate the right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in you. That's why you have to contemplate what constitutes right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So all this is part and parcel of the training. Then when you come to the right mindfulness and right samadhi, is the samadhi path factor. And this one, when you cultivate it correctly, it leads to direct seeing. So this one will lead to direct seeing, awakening. But this one is without thought. When you are in sati, you are without thought, direct seeing, leading to awakening. And this is the one that gives you the wisdom, the understanding. That's why your right view, your first path factor, become more and more refined. You not only understand the law of karma after that, you understand the dependent origination. You understand how mental phenomena, physical phenomena, and nature's phenomena function. Especially your mind, mundane mind, mental phenomena. It follows this law, paticca samuppada, twirling. The Buddha called it ittapacciyata, or paticca samuppada. Some call it the dwelling, paticca samuppada. So this is a very important understanding. If you want to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, you must have this tree. And this tree is actually part of Noble Eightfold Path, nothing else. Then to help you further, the Buddha expanded on this. He has the other essential dhamma. He called dana, sila, and bhavana. If you look at these three, sila is the same, correct? Then what is dana? Generosity. This is what you need to cultivate. If you have generosity, parami, then this parami will give you the condition to have better life, to have the good life. Means if you have wealth, you have the means to help people, to develop all the parami, then you can have more condition for cultivation. Just like in our society, let's say if your karma is not so good, you are born into a situation where the three meals and a shelter over your head is a problem. Do you think you got time to cultivate? You got no time. Because your first need, which is Maslow's needs theory, is food and shelter. So you have to look into that first. Then after you have the food and shelter, when you have more favorable condition, then only you can look at spiritual thing. Then only you can start the meditation. So Dhanaparami is very important, and this perfection is very, very vital. That's why 10 perfections start with this. And your cultivation also should start with it. Without dana, very difficult for you to have good condition to develop the parami. Then bhavana is meditation. So meditation consists of these two. Samadhi and panya will bring about the meditative training. That's why it's called panya. So samadhi here is sati and samadhi. So what are you doing in meditation is you try to develop bhavana through the cultivation of samadhi. So samadhi is to train your mind to have sati, stabilize it to become samadhi. That's sitting as they are to develop wisdom. That's why these two become meditation. And it's so simple. So when you understand this, you understand the cultivation. So when you understand the cultivation, you can do it with understanding. You no longer become gullible. You don't have to believe what people tell you. Method, technique, note this, note that. Thinking that by doing all this, you are meditating. No. As long as you fail to train your mind to have mindfulness leading to heedfulness, you are not meditating. Because without heedfulness, you cannot cultivate. That's why the Buddha make it very clear, the Appamada verse on mindfulness, verse 21, 22, 23. The heedful never die. And heedfulness is the path to the deathless. It's all in the Dhammapada verse. Whereas you don't train your mind, the heedless are as if dead. That is a very dangerous situation. Means you don't stand a chance. Spiritually, you are dead. Then verse 22, 23, you read up yourself. They are all there. Okay, then the next one is Nikama. Nikama is renunciation. Renunciation, the meaning is very deep. Normal people thought renunciation is just to renounce, to become a monk. What other meaning do you understand? Apart from renouncing to become a monk. What other understanding do you have? Come, give it a try. Anybody want to try? Detach is correct. Detach from what? Because when you renounce, the word renunciation is a very, very wide-ranging word. You renounce the worldly life. Means what? You want to become a monk. That's why you renounce to become a monk. Means you renounce your worldly life. You give up all the worldly things. That's why the monk, they just don simple. Three-piece robe and all those things. Then they cannot have any possession. Then they even change their name to a spiritual name. Means they renounce, technically, they renounce their physical possession. They renounce their relationship with the world. So that is the first stage of renunciation. So renunciation got many levels. When you renounce the world, you become a monk. Then you have to renounce everything that is impermanent, that you cannot take along. And that renunciation is true renunciation. Just like our sister said, detach. You have to renounce and detach from all this. Means you don't develop the delusion to attach, to cling, because they are not real. They are condition arising, dependent originator, originating. Means dependent on condition they arise. So in Mandarin is yin yan fa, yin yan he he. There is no reality. Everything is condition arising, dependent originating. Without condition, nothing arises. When condition arise, phenomena arise, thing arise. That's why they are not real. These are dependent originating. That's why the Buddha's teaching is everything is dependent originating. When it's dependent originating, it cannot be permanent. Because dependent on condition, things change. And our world, our universe, is in a state of flux. Every moment, every instant, the condition keep on changing, evolving. That's why nothing is permanent. Nothing exists forever. Things are always in a state of flux, evolving. Even water finds its own level. Electricity, they also flow according to nature's law. So all this you understand. So the true renunciation is at the mind level, when you are not deluded, where you can renounce everything that brings about suffering, attachment, clinging. So the true renunciation is when you have the wisdom, you will not suffer anymore. That's the perfection of renunciation is when you can sever all suffering. When you can endure and sever all, they call dukkha. This is the real renunciation. Then we move on. The next one is panya. Panya is wisdom. Wisdom also need to be perfected. When you are just enlightened, it's not the perfection of wisdom yet. When you become fully enlightened, then you have the perfection of wisdom. That's why the bodhisattva, they take this bodhisattva vow to penetrate all dhamma. So that they can realize the perfection of wisdom, prajna paramita. Then virya is spiritual zeal, tenacity, or virya is a type of energy to drive you to cultivate. So this virya is very important. It will keep you diligently going, persevere, so that you can endure, can persevere. So virya is very important. Then kanti is also very important. Patient endurance with wisdom. Kanti is not just patient, but patient endurance with wisdom. Without wisdom is suppression. You understand? With wisdom is you endure because you know these are the conditions. Condition like that, things will be like that. I need to endure, I need to endure. Then I need to seek cure or help. I seek. But for the moment, there is no other way. It's like, take for example when you are sick. At that moment when you are sick, there is the reality. So you need to have the wisdom to endure. You must have patience. You complain also no use. Because the Buddha said you got two choices. React to it and become miserable. Or complain and become miserable. The second way to look at it with wisdom and understanding is the reality is such, I have to accept. After I accept, I act. I act means what? If I need to seek cure, if I need to see a doctor or a specialist or somebody who can understand this sickness or disease, then I seek. So by having this understanding, your kanti, patient endurance with wisdom will free your mind. Otherwise you become miserable. Mentally afflicted, you become angry, you blame yourself, you blame others. I wouldn't have got this disease if I had taken care of myself, if my doctor had told me earlier. All these are not reality, but you project your thought and try to console yourself. But it makes you only miserable. The hatred, the anger, the unhappiness. So patient endurance with wisdom is very important. Then satya is truth. Truth is a very important parami. You can have this truth perfected. You can invoke power of truth, like what Sakyamuni has done. By the power of this truth, may whatever arise. He even taught his disciple, Angulimala, and all those things. So power of truth is very, very effective, very powerful. Then adhittana is also a very important parami. Adhittana means when you make affirmation, when you make aspiration or you make resolution, means you are very, very serious about it, self-determination and all these things. You can invoke power of merits. power of truth, power of whatever virtue that you have developed. So all this can bring forth the causes and conditions for your whatever whatever aspiration that you have made to come true, to help you in many ways to overcome your worldly situation or problem. That metta, of course, is loving kindness. When you have love, there is no negativity. That's why metta is a very powerful mind state. You must continue to express more and more loving kindness towards the world, towards living beings. You must even express loving kindness towards your physical body. You must thank your physical body for supporting you for so long, for giving you the condition to see the world, to experience the world. So you have this loving kindness towards yourself, then you radiate love. One thing that you need to understand is this body and mind, even though it's a vehicle and a tool, chemically conditioned out for you to come to this world. But you have to understand with wisdom how to use it. Otherwise, you become foolish, like a lot of heedless people. I used to share this with Dharma friends. You see, what human beings don't understand is, if it's a tool, your mind, your thought process is a tool for you to use. So use it appropriately, understand? It's just like a knife. You use the knife to help you to shape fruits, cut vegetables, or do carving and all those useful things. But you use that knife to cut yourself, harm yourself, hurt yourself, and hit on others. Is that the right way to use that tool? Is it right? Definitely it's not that. But do you know the heedless living being who don't have Dhamma and understanding, they use their thought precisely to harm themselves, hurt themselves, and hit out at others and make them miserable. That is the wrong way to use that tool. That's how karmic take effect. How do you harm yourself, hurt yourself? You go and think and think and think until you are so depressed, so miserable, so sorrowful, full of lamentation, full of fear, worry, anxiety. That is not the right way to use thought. You use thought without delusion, you are without understanding, you arise the wrong thought. And what is wrong thought? Thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And because they have the evil root, they condition you into karmic negativity. There's a thought that conditions your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your unhappiness, your selfishness, your craving, your emotional negative. These are all wrong thoughts. Then why do you use thought this way? It means you are so foolish, so deluded. You don't love yourself. If you love yourself, you will never harm yourself with the wrong thought. Do you understand? And see this point clearly. That's why every time you get into trouble, don't go and do that. Don't harm yourself anymore. Love yourself. If you truly love yourself, you will never allow yourself to be harmed. Like you love your children. How do you love your children? You will protect them with whatever you have, anasana, so that they will not face any danger or any problem. Your loved one, your children, you can sacrifice, you can do so much thing. But for yourself, your own form and mind, you don't know how to love. Means you don't love yourself. You don't understand what love is. You don't know how to protect this form and mind from karmic negativity and danger, from arising the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action. If you understand the Dhamma this way, you become totally different. Well, my life, my physical form and mind, I need to take care. This one got karmic implication. It is subject to karma. If I don't take care, it will harm itself, hurt itself. Means you use the form and mind wrongly. And this is something that you have to reflect deep and develop the understanding so that this love can always be there. When you have love, you can never harm yourself and harm others. And that is what metta is all about. And when you understand love, you will never create karmic negativity through wrong thought, through the wrong use of your physical body and mind, the vehicle and the tool. You use it for the good of the many and yourself. No more to harm others. It's just like one of my teachers used to say this to us. And he wrote this poem, very beautiful. He said, if our physical body can talk, you will feel ashamed. But this physical body will tell you. He will call you master. He said, oh master, harm me not. Why? He said, because I'm only tissue and cell. Have me work for you before I am too old, too sick, and too fragile for the good of yourself, your loved one, and the many. How will you feel when the body talks to you this way? And do you know how we harm our body or not? When you got problem, you go and intoxicate yourself, drink. Then they even have a song for it, Ku Jiu Man Pei. Oh. You go and drink until that bitter beer, full, one glass. So why do you do that? Because when you get angry, you want to commit suicide. You want to hurt yourself, harm yourself. And you stress your body out through anger, through hatred, through the evil root. What are you doing? You are destroying yourself. You are not loving yourself. And this is the aspect of Dhamma that a lot of Buddhists don't see. That's why my nature feels very funny. How can human beings do that to themselves? Means you totally don't understand the teaching. You totally don't understand who you are, what you are. And you don't know what love is. You only talk about metta, love. You think by chanting, may all beings be well and happy, you have love. You don't have love, I tell you, because you don't feel it in yourself. You don't radiate that love out. When you radiate that love out, it's different. It's from your heart, it come out. And you mean well, you are sincere. May all beings, you really feel them all be well and happy. You feel the well-being and happiness in them, and you radiate this love. Because when you yourself understand that this is love, and when you have this love, your energy becomes very positive. Love has got no opposite, no evil root, no negativity. That's why this is right thought. You must radiate more and more of this virtue in you. So this is something that you have to train, develop, have the understanding so that you can put it into practice, so that you can really do it. Then the last part is upekkha. Upekkha is equanimity of mind. You must have wisdom to have upekkha. Without wisdom, it is suppression. It is energy field, conditioned state. That's why those in the fourth jhana, they also have upekkha. But it's not born of wisdom, born of a conditioned state, energy field, that make their mind in an equanimous state. But when they lose the ability to have this jhana, when the mind is not in that jhanic state, then without wisdom, they still have problem, they will suffer. That's why equanimity born of wisdom, you don't need the physical body to be in the state of jhana, a conditioned state to endure things, to be in the state of peace, no need. You only need understanding and wisdom, then with that wisdom, the mind liberate. The mind got no more problem. The mind understand. So that is the 10 perfection. These are the 10 perfections that the Bodhisattva who is intent on a Sammasambuddhahood cultivation must cultivate and perfect. Then the Mahayana emphasizes only on 6. They call it the six paramita, or six perfection of the Mahayana tradition. So they focus on these six, where these six are more important. They also have dana, sila, kanti, virya. Then dhyan, samadhi here is an added paramita. That one includes meditation, means it covers the rest. That's why finally it's also prajna or wisdom. So more or less the same, except that this dhyan, which is samadhi, power factor, sati and samadhi, you can break it up. It will give you a lot of spin-off to develop the 10 perfection like above. Then word of wisdom by the Buddha we have gone through, extracted from the Dhammapada verse on avoiding all evil, do good, and purify the mind. We are having right view with regards to law of karma. These are Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 183, verse 21, 22, and 23. You should read through on your own to understand. Maybe verse 1 and verse 2 I haven't explained. So now I will explain to you. This one is a very important Dhammapada twin verse. The first two verse within the 423 Dhammapada verse. Dhammapada verse, they are truth, as proclaimed by Sakyamuni Buddha. That's why he categorized them into 423 Dhammapada verses. These are the truths that are evergreen that the Buddha has spoken of. That's why they compile it into a series of Dhammapada saying or quotes. And the first two is the most important. The Buddha said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. This one refers to which mind? Mundane mind, your thinking mind. So you have to take care of that mind. Because he said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything arises. So the Mahayana term is also very profound and very good. He said, 一切一切唯心造, means arise from the mind, 心造成的. So if mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief, when mind arises, everything arises, so what must you do? You must take care of mind. You must train this mind. So the Buddha said, because this mind is so powerful, if you don't take care of this mind, you will become miserable. Then Dhammapada verse 1 take its course. You read it out. Dhammapada verse 1. Read it out. So if this is what you choose, then nobody can help you, understand? Because he said your mind is the forerunner of all things and mind is chief. And when mind arises, everything arises. So everything arises from the mind. So if you speak, act and think, means wrong speech, wrong action and wrong thought, then what happened to you? Where you speak with a wicked mind, unwholesome mind, with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then suffering will follow you. Like the wheel that follow the hoof of the oxen's cart. So if you want to have suffering, be heedless. Don't train your mind. Understand? Then act heedlessly with a wicked mind, with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So this Dhammapada verse tell you very clearly your life. How you want to live your life depend on you. If you choose to be heedless, suffering will follow you. Like the wheel that follow the hoof of the oxen's cart. But if you choose to be happy, Dhammapada verse 2, which is the complementary verse. Read the second verse. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. So if one speaks act and think with a pure, wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So if you want happiness in life, it's very simple. Train your mind. Be mindful. Be heedful. Act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. This is mindfulness training. This is precept training. That's why you want to improve your life. It's very simple. Train your mind. Be heedful. You are home. You will be enlightened. You will have good life. And it's so simple, so easy. So the rest is straightforward. So make that firm decision never to allow yourself to be heedless anymore. To have all this delusion with the evil roots to cause you all the karmic negativity and downfall. Then you will be all the way up. Your life will transform. You will become different. This is how a cultivator should have the understanding to make a difference to your life. You don't have to believe feng shui and all those funny things where you have to pay money. You go to all the medium number law. It's not going to help you much as well. Your karma is the one that decides your life. Instead of taking care of karma, you go and believe all these things. But don't go and quote me. Otherwise, the fortune teller or the Lilian Tu all come after me. But there are people who have that karmic negativity to believe all those things. Well, last time they promote all this. So now they go back and get themselves entangled with all this. That's why you don't understand, you promote the wrong thing. Then karmic-wise, when you come, you become the victim. People promote back to you. But when you have the right understanding and right view, as long as I don't take care of karma, my life will be affected. So why I depend on feng shui, fortune-telling and all those things? No point. It doesn't mean they don't have their signs. They have their signs. They play such a little significance in your life. Because feng shui got its signs, understand not? Man and nature must harmonize. You know feng shui, you can benefit a little bit, understand not, from it. Because you try to tap the good qi to give you the favorable condition to have the good life. But whatever karma you have is limited, same. So it's like you use your merit earlier. After that, no more. You also get into trouble again. So no point for me. Forget for all these things. And you cannot avoid all the bad feng shui because your karma will make sure the condition is such it will bring about the negativity of karma. You cannot run. Nowhere to hide. There is no refuge safe, like the Buddha said. Except the triple gem. You don't go back to the triple gem. You go and believe all this. Good luck to you. Nobody can help you. Okay? Then the rest you go and read. We have gone through. So we want to save some time. We go to 1.4. The last advice of the Buddha before his passing away, the parinibbana, is apamadena sampadeta. He said, strive on with heedfulness. So you have to make a note. The heedful never die. This is Dhammapada verse 21. So never die means you have eternal life. Spiritually, you are not dead. So you have the eternal life, the spiritual life. Then the other thing is, the heedless are as if dead. So even though you're still alive, you exist through life, understand not? But spiritually, you are dead. Do you understand that? You may be alive, but without heedfulness, you don't stand a chance in salvation. Means the spiritual understanding, the door is closed. That's why the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. Means spiritually, you are dead. Even though you are physically alive. So there is a big difference between existing through life and living life. You know the difference or not? Huh? You know the difference or not? Of course you know the difference. Huh? To exist through life means gong gong, tua gong gong, jia gong gong, si, everything also gong. But you just exist, you don't know anything. But to truly live means you understand, you really live. You are with the moment in full, pure awareness, with the silent mind, to experience the moment. Understand? The pristine reality and beauty of life within the moment. That's why the Zen, a cup of Chinese tea, when you drink with full awareness, that is meditation. Because within that moment when you drink, there is no thought. You understand? Because you are fully present. You are fully aware. No thought means what? No fear. No worry. No anxiety. No sorrow. No lamentation. And there is only peace. There is only silence. There is only awareness. Stillness. Joy. This is real living. Understand? Most human beings never live. You know why or not? You got so much problem. You know what are your problem? You worry about this, worry about that. Got money also worry. No money also worry. Rain also complain. No rain also complain. Then not only your own problem, your health problem, your career problem, your relationship problem. You worry about your children's problem. Then your grandchildren's problem. That's why human being a lot of delusion. And fear, worry, anxiety is like part of your consciousness. And that is heedless living, do you understand? Because this moment you can be happy, you can be peaceful, you can be really beautiful. You go and worry and make your consciousness miserable. Do you understand? Can you see this point or not? You better wake up. Because you have been using your mundane mind this way, understand? Every day also kanchong. Kanchong what? What your thought tell you, understand? But you believe your thought. Are you die or tomorrow? How? Then all this is not a reality, but you miss the moment, understand? You keep on projecting your thought, worry this, worry that, run here, run there. And the mind is all over, so heedless. Whereas if you are mindful, aware, you just reflect on it. Okay. This is a reality. So how can I resolve this amicably? And then mindfully do one thing at a time. Solve it. No need to worry. Why must you worry? Doctor say, got problem. Oh, okay. Then go and do a check. Have a second opinion. If really confirmed, so what? This is a reality, like the Buddha said. Birth, old age, sickness and death is a reality. This pertains to the physical body form, not me. The vehicle. If I have taken care of my life, taken care of karma, I am not scared that this form disperses. Then you have better body, understand? Because you have the spiritual wealth, merits. So you can have a better body in the future, where you have taken care of karma. So when you are sure of the teaching, when you understand the teaching, you do not fear die, because nothing die. No one die, even you are not enlightened. Your karma will take care of you. In future, you will have better life. Then when you have the condition to become enlightened, awakened, your mind is so different. And this is how Dhamma can bring forth great transformation in the living being, in your life, in your future, in your destiny, in your understanding, so that you can become really a beautiful human being in the truest sense. So sometimes they say, you may be born human, but you are not a human being. So all this saying, sometimes there's a lot of truth here, understand? Because you are worse than a human being means what? Human being means the lowest level you can go is because if you are a true human being, you really have love, understand? Because to be born as a human being is very rare, do you know or not? Do you know or not? And it's not easy to be born a human being. Like the Buddha say, the probability of you taking a human birth, the probability is very low. He got the analogy of the turtle egg. Later on, we will cover. So I won't go through it. Okay. Then we go on to the final summary of the First Noble Truth. So the Buddha said, in short, it is the attachment or grasping and clinging to the five aggregates of form and mind, upadana khandas, which we have covered yesterday. We are one's self-delusion or ignorance that I cause suffering. So this one you have to inquire, contemplate, reflect, and understand clearly. Then you can put it to test. Investigate on what the Buddha said. Is it the truth? If I attach, cling, grasp to this five aggregate of form and mind, did suffering arise? Then you confirm it. Then you will have the understanding not to allow all this delusion, self-delusion, to take hold of your mundane mind, thinking mind, to condition your misery, your mental suffering. Yeah. So this is a very important word. A very important understanding. So the word dukkha, or what they call the word dukkha, or in Sanskrit, is slightly different spelling on here. It's one of those Pali terms that cannot be translated adequately into English by one word. For no English word covers the same ground as dukkha in Pali. So suffering, ill will, anguish, unsatisfactoriness are some favorite renderings. The word pain, sorrow, misery, conflict, and so forth are also used. But the word dukkha, however, includes all that and more than that. So there is a reference. Page 37 of the Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasi Thera. That book is not bad. That book is quite good. So you can refer to that. This word dukkha doesn't mean all the negative connotation. No. The Buddha say, if you have attachment, craving, grasping, positive or negative, then only dukkha arise. That's why all sense pleasure is a prelude to suffering. Do you understand? It doesn't mean misery. Negative mind state only bring about suffering. Or sense pleasure. Is a prelude. I forgot this word, how to spell already. Is it correct? L-U-D-E, yeah? So this one, by now, I think you should be able to understand it. That's why you have to be careful when you live life. Do not get yourself indulged, sensual indulgence. When you have good food, good life, good condition, you can have it, the Buddha say. Nothing wrong, because it's your karma, your parami, you receive it. But don't attach, understand? Attach means, if you attach and cling and want this repeated when there is no condition for it to happen, when you cannot get what you want, what happens? You become miserable, afflicted, suffering arise. So all sense pleasure, if you don't have wisdom, is a prelude to suffering. But if you have wisdom, you will understand there is condition for it to arise, then you can have it. Have it. The Buddha never say you cannot eat good food. During his time, the king invited him. You think the king offered him simple food? The rich people. The only difference is he does not attach and cling. That's why when he go for pindapat, he go for whatever that is given. And he never insists that it has to be vegetarian or what. It must be the three types of pyramid. That's it. Simple. And this is what you must have as wisdom in you, so that you live life in accordance with the reality, accord and flow. And conditioned like that, things will be like that. So be contented with everything. Be contented with every moment, whatever that arises. Then you are always at peace. You are always happy. Otherwise, your mind keep on, they call calculating. Ayo, why that guy give me so lousy one? Give to Brother Theo all the good one. So if you have this type of thought, who suffer? You suffer. You create karmic negativity. Then sometimes when the monk come, wow, how come monk can sit and have all the nice food? After they take finish, then only the balance pass to her. If you think like that, your mind state is gone. Because you compare, you weigh, and you don't understand. For you to be eligible, cultivate, become like those monks that people respect. Then they will give you the offering, because this is the parami that they receive. Understand? Although it's quite general in that sense. But most of the time, you need to have the parami, the condition, to have all these things. So your good life, if you look at people, how come this life they come, they are so wealthy, like so blessed, born with a silver spoon? You think it's by chance? No, because it's through karmic conditioning. They have cultivated. You think Warren Buffett, Bill Gates come, by chance they become so wealthy? No, you look at this life, they also donated so much. And this is their perfection, their parami, their karmic inheritance. And you look at this line, even my form and my disagreement, I can see everything has to do with your past cultivation. Otherwise, it cannot be what it is today. It cannot be so perfect, so like blessed. You call blessing or luck. I can tell you, there is no such thing as luck in this world. Everything follows nature's law. What you say luck is where you don't see, you don't understand. You say, oh, yo, this guy is so lucky. So born into such a great family with so much wealth and possession, then straight away CEO and all those things. Then you say, why my parents like that? You go and ask yourself, why you don't take care of karma? Why you didn't perfect yourself, do all this parami? So if you have trained your children out, give them the right education, then give them the right condition to become successful people. This is your karmic inheritance. So that in future you come, you know what will happen. You will have parents who will train you up, give you the good education, bring you out, and put you in all those positions. But this is what you have done for your children. That's a law of karma, is you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. If you neglect your children, don't bother about their education. You neglect everything, your duty, or you never do. You go and gamble, you go and squander off your wealth, then you come back, you bully your wife, you neglect your children. You know what happens in future? When you take future birth, you have family and parents the same, drunkard, gambler like you. Then treat you the same way you treat your children. This is what karma is all about. So if you want to have the good life, if you want people to treat you well, you better treat them well, especially your in-laws. Understand? Don't play a fool. You think you can bully your in-law because they are old already. You play all those cunning tricks behind. So later on, when you become people's in-law, you cannot beg for your daughter-in-law, Kau-kau. Yeah, this is what you did. But if you treat them well, you will have daughter-in-law that will treat you very well. So, which you prefer? Bully people or take care of people? You must have love to take care of people. And so whatever you cultivate, you give back to your nature. You never lose it. Understand? Generosity, giving, is giving to your karmic nature. If you are good to people, you are good to your own karmic nature. Because in future, you have the condition to receive them back. So, if I understand this law, what will I do? I will never behave negatively. I will always be good, be kind, be virtuous. That's why the Buddha said, all evil you must avoid. Otherwise, your life will be miserable. Sabba pavasa akaranam. You cannot play a fool with karma. Karma is one thing. You cannot play a fool, I tell you. I always say in Hokkien, bo kao lu bo siong sin, I tell you. You cannot ignore karma. It is very powerful. For those cultivators, they show it to you immediately. When I was young, I saw all this. But I couldn't understand at that time. How come like that one? Then later on, when I have the condition to receive the Dhamma, then when I cultivate, when I develop the ability to inherit my path, then I start to understand. No wonder when I was young, all this showed to me. Cannot. You cannot do anything negative. I cannot deceive, I cannot lie, I cannot do all that. The moment I do, I kena kau kau. Even when I was very young, I stole 2 ringgit from my mother's ang pao. I tell you, that year was a havoc year for me. Every year, my luck very good, my blessing. But that year, because my father gave my mom 12 ringgit, so I thought 2 ringgit I take, she would know. So I happily passed the 10 ringgit to my mother. Then I went off as usual. You know, Chinese New Year, we gamble on. Then I very good at cards on. My willpower very strong. I want the thing come. I tell you, that year was so sweet until you never believe. Horrible, rotten. I lost everything before Che Sajame. And never before. Every year with 2 ringgit, ang pao, I can make 100 over ringgit. Without fail, for so many years. Until that year, I stole my mother's 2 ringgit. I tell you. And it show it to you. They call in Cantonese, ho che one. You know what che? In Hokkien call what? Che. A chia. Msi sui alone, no. Ho che one, no. You won't believe also, it really come on, no. You see, because my willpower is very strong, you know what happened? We play the center pool. Every bet is 10 cents. So one pool, like 10 person. Then the highest point take. So I was down with 30 cents from $4. Yeah, normally I got 2 ringgit. Then my mother 2, 4. I was completely down. My cut horrible. So left with 30 cents, I determined to really have 10 points so that I can take the pool. And the card really came. I got 10 points. I was so happy. I thought I'd take somebody 3 pictures. Wow, that's my chair. And some of them might know. The next one, lucky chair. I determined 3 pictures. 3 pictures come. Somebody 3 per 10. I tell you. And the last one is the worst. I got a 3 per 3. Somebody got a 3 per 8. Got such thing on. You go and ask yourself and see you got such thing or not. And after that day, I vow never to steal. Yeah. Never to misappropriate anymore. That's why it shows it to you. You cannot play a fool with karma. And this is the point I want to drive, because a lot of people cultivate Buddhism or the Dhamma through what? Knowledge. You will never have the real understanding. The real understanding is when you really on the path, you see all this nature's law operating. Then you see for yourself. You have to understand. This is no play. You know what is play. Cannot play a fool. You have to be dead serious. Okay, the next one. 7 factors of enlightenment. So this one, I think you are familiar. Anybody not familiar with the 7 factors of enlightenment? So nobody put up the hand means everybody know. No need to explain. Okay. So 7 factors of enlightenment, or they call Satta Bhujangas. Bhujangas are enlightenment factors. Satta is 7. So sati, or mindfulness, is the first of the seven factors of enlightenment. Because these are mind states that can bring about enlightenment. So the first factor of enlightenment, the Buddha make it very clear, sati. That's why all of meditation that doesn't start with sati is dead. You understand now? So sati is mindfulness or awareness without thought. Then the second factor of enlightenment is investigation of Dhamma, Dhamma Vichaya. Without sati, one cannot be heedful or ever mindful. Hence, one cannot investigate the Dhamma. So now you understand. If you are not mindful, you cannot investigate because you cannot see your mental intention. You cannot see how the nature's law operates. That's why you must have clarity of mind, awareness, to be aware of your content of consciousness, all of your movement. That's why when you are mindful, your mind is very sensitive. The slightest agitation, movement, or reaction, you feel it. That's why you are so sensitive. You are incapable of breaking all those precepts. Like the moment of activity when this mind wants to stir and become unhappy, straight away you are aware. Then all of your movement, even when you want to kill a mosquito, to break that precept, you know how difficult or not. If you are mindful, impossible to break. How did you have this aversion or anger to kill a mosquito? What happened? You must have seen the mosquito. Then through memory, ayo, this fellow dengue. Huh. Straight away. Then what? Don't like the fellow. Then you want to whack. Then what you do when you are young? Pa! The two hands are very fast. Then sometimes you miss. Then what you do? You go and look for shell talk, motin. This is what we do when we don't have the Dhamma, when we don't understand. So whatever you do without understanding, there is also karmic implication, but these are not so serious a thing because these are lower beings. But if you have the Dhamma already, you cannot harm, because if you have the Dhamma and yet you harm, it's very severe, very, very severe. So what you have to do is you have to have mindfulness, awareness. So the moment your aversion inside your mind, your dislike and all those things, you can be mindful of it, understand? Then you know through memory, through your conditioning, you are conditioned to dislike mosquito because you are selfish. You fear mosquito bite you, you got dengue, and you got problem. So to you, the life of the mosquito is not important. Yours is more important, and that is selfishness. Understand? You can prevent mosquito through netting and all those things. So do the proper one. You don't have to destroy life. You don't have to kill. You only need to make sure the environment is taken care of. Then stagnant water, dispose it off. Don't allow it to be a breeding ground and all those things. So these are the things that you can do to resolve all this issue. You don't have to resort to killing and harming and all those things. So when you saw the mental intention that you are a cultivator, you cannot move. Let's say the mental intention passed by, you don't know. Then out of that aversion or anger, you want to kill. So for you to kill, what must you do? You must move your hand, isn't it? If you got kaya upasana, the moment your hand moves, you aware, isn't it? Then it will stop. Then what are you doing? This is killing. But you take the precept, I undertake the training rule to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow. So how can you continue with the action unless you didn't train? You are not serious about precept. Then for you to whack the mosquito, the moment you hit, the mosquito must still be there. You think the probability very high. So chances is you miss. So to break the precept is not easy. So first, the perception of that mosquito, either through you what you saw or what you hear, the sound, then this negative thought, because you are mindful, you are aware, you are sensitive, it cannot. then your precept, you undertake that training rule. Then for you to act out of it, which is transgression, your hand must move. And you must do that action. And the mosquito must be there for you to kill, for you to break that precept. So, to me, it's impossible. You cannot do. Unless you have not trained, you don't have the mindfulness, awareness. That's why through investigation, you need mindfulness. To keep precept, you need mindfulness. Without mindfulness, you cannot be heedful. You cannot be ever mindful. You cannot train. And this is what Dhamma is all about. So I will read on. Without sati, one cannot be heedful or ever mindful. Hence, one cannot investigate the Dhamma. That's the reason why sati or heedfulness is very important. For sati is life, because the heedless are as if dead. So this is a very important understanding. Then with sati, one can investigate the Dhamma. And if it's the truth, then this Dhamma can stand up to investigation. Hence, giving rise to a very strong faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then spiritual zeal or virya, which is the third enlightenment factor, will arise, thereby enabling one to cultivate the Dhamma according to the advice of the Buddha. Then sati will then stabilize. When your sati stabilize means you are just aware without thought, then piti will arise. So once piti arise, piti is the type of spiritual joy. Piti is the fourth enlightenment factor. So once piti is stabilized and become more refined, it will accumulate into pasati, the silent mind, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. This is the fifth enlightenment factor. That's why when you meditate, you just relax and silent and allow the piti to become more and more quiet, more and more refined. It may go through sukha, but don't attach. Just allow it to be, continue to relax. Then finally, no movement at all. Everything become very quiet. That is what tranquility of mind is all about. Stillness is all about. The silent mind is all about. And this is the meditative mind. So vipassati, becoming more and more stable, the mind will accumulate into samadhi, a state, a stable, collected, and unwavering mind, which is the sixth enlightenment factor. With sati and samadhi in place, wisdom or panya will keep on arising, giving rise to the last of seven factors of enlightenment, which is equanimity or upekkha. And it's so simple. So you look at the note, samadhi is equal to a stable, collected, and unwavering mind that does not waver at the moment of sense experience while it is in the midst of life. So this one I have explained. Because that samadhi has the stability, is collected and unwavering. So in the midst of life, when you see something, hear something, or think of something, the mind is collected and unwavering. That's why it does not stir. It has that stability. That's why you need that to see things as they are. Otherwise, your stirring is due to your mind, your memory, your brain, your views, your opinion, your conditioning. So that one is not the direct seeing. That one is acting according to memory, acting according to your views, your opinion, and you react and you stir. That's how that content of consciousness went in. But when the memory, the conditioning within the brain is not this, distracting you or not coming out to interfere with what you see, then you see with the silent mind, you see things as they are, without the words, without the concept, just that direct seeing. That's why that one can awaken to the universal characteristic. That one can understand what actually happened without words. That is what enlightenment is all about, awakening is all about. So when you are completely silent, still, and aware, mindful, anytime it can happen. And this is the real sati. Okay, we go on to the next page. The three universal characteristics. This one is anicchang, dukkang, anatta, impermanent, suffering state, and non-self, or empty nature, means not a permanent, unchanging entity. So this one, I think, It's quite easy to understand by now. Huh? Anyway, I will quickly run through. So what is anicchang? Anicchang is impermanent. What does it mean? Anicchang, impermanent. So what does it mean? What's your understanding? This word. The Buddha said this is a universal characteristic. Why is it a universal characteristic? Universal means what? It's common to all. Understand or not? Means whatever phenomena that arise in this universe, they have these characteristics of impermanent. You understand or not? Because it's called a universal characteristic. Means every phenomena, you take for example, what phenomena? Whatever that you can hear, smell, taste, tactile feel or think, or become conscious of. It can be a mental phenomenon, a physical phenomenon, like our physical body is a physical phenomenon. Then all your mental movement, activity, your feeling, sankhara, the aggregate of mind, they are mental phenomena. Then the nature's phenomena, nature's movement, flow. You know what is a phenomenon or not? Do you know what is a phenomenon, the English word? What is a phenomenon? You have been using this word, but what is it? Very good. Anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So from this definition, you will know. Anything perceivable by the mind. The mind is a phenomenon. So now you understand. So phenomena doesn't mean there must be movement. Understand not? Most people associate phenomena with movement. When there is something that moves, then there is a phenomena. Understand? Like my hand, when I move, this is a phenomena, arise already. Then I move again. What happened? Cease. Understand? So the phenomena is that movement. When you perceive this movement, this phenomena arise. But how did it arise? Because the condition behind is what? I move this hand, understand not? And through your seeing consciousness, you perceive it. That's why anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomena. So any mental perception give rise to phenomena. And all these phenomena, is it permanent? Is it permanent? What you see, the moment you see, it's gone, understand? The next moment you see another one, again gone. So how can perception be permanent? That's why all phenomena are impermanent, and this is a universal characteristic. Characteristic. Yeah, this characteristic is universal. So the Buddha said, because it is impermanent. That's why, this one need to be adjusted. Okay. So this is a universal characteristic because it's exhibited by every phenomena. So if you look at the chair, the table, is it a phenomena? No movement, no. Because you can perceive it, isn't it? True or not? Is the table permanent? At the moment, look like very permanent, isn't it? like your human body. It has been with you for so long, since birth until now. You say, Bratio, this is me. But do you know every moment is changing in a state of flux? If you know science, all the molecules inside there, they are in a state of flux, vibrating, energy, non-stop. So there is nothing permanent. And the condition for this to arise is how? Either the temple must have bought it or somebody donate, then it has the condition to arise. Then we come for retreat, we bring it out. These are the conditions, exist already. Then this is impermanent because any time this table can be disposed of. When the condition no more, gone. Let's say people donate it away or sell it away or get destroyed. Then the condition no more, it ceases to be. So everything that is condition arising is of the nature to cease. That's why the Buddha said, whatever is of the nature to arise is of the nature to pass. Just like this physical body. Whatever is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. Because they are condition arising phenomena. So causal phenomena and condition arising phenomena, they are of the nature to exhibit these characteristics of impermanence. We are dependent on condition, they arise. So if you understand that everything is impermanent, not a permanent and changing entity, that's why it's empty. It's not real. You cannot own, you cannot possess, you cannot hold on to them. Well, these are all condition arising entity. Never a reality. It come and go, come and go. Arise and pass away. Some very fast, some very slow. But finally, it's empty. Empty nature of existence. No reality. So if you attach, cling and hold, because you want this to be forever yours, unchanging, like this body, don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die, is it possible? It's impossible, because this goes the way of nature. So if you are against nature's law, when you cannot get what you want, means when this body get old, get sick, and die, you will be afflicted. Because you attach, you cling, you want it to be forever young. Don't get old and don't get sick. And you cling onto it. You believe it's you. That's how attachment brings about suffering. So whatever that is impermanent, you cannot cling. You cannot grasp. You cannot hold. You cannot try to own it, have it, possess it. That's why possessiveness is the cause of suffering. When you cling onto your loved one, your possession, your wealth, things that you hold on to dearly, it leads to suffering. So whatever that is impermanent leads to suffering. Very clear. Then whatever that is impermanent is empty, non-self, not real, not you. Can see that, right? Because it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this entity can own things. All this can be mine. No such thing. That's why the five daily contemplation, you will understand it very clearly. Okay? So, slowly, as you reflect, contemplate, as you read through now, you will understand all this. Then the next one is also very important. The third characteristic of anatta, I need to explain a bit. Anatta doesn't mean just non-self. Non-self is just one aspect of anatta. The real meaning is, it is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That is the real meaning. That's why it is empty in that sense. Empty nature of existence. Emptiness doesn't mean nothingness. Emptiness means empty nature of existence. Because it continuously change, dependent originating, condition arising. So all causal phenomena are impermanent. They lead to suffering. So this is the meaning of anatta. That's the reason why if you read the sutta, the Buddha say, rupang anicca. You heard of this or not? So rupang is not only your physical body, anasara. This table is also form, mental form, anasara. Then how can you say this one non-self? Do you understand? This one is anatta, but it's not non-self. Yeah, this one is condition arising, impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. Dependent on condition, it arises. When condition cease to be, it ceases to be. That's why the anatta nature of all phenomena. That's why form is also anatta. Then your feeling also anatta. It's the same. There is not a permanent unchanging entity. So with that, hopefully, you will develop deeper understanding of the universal characteristic. Then when you see that everything is just the way it is, following these three universal characteristics, then why are you still deluded, deceived by the phenomenal world? Why do you still think that they are still so real, so permanent? Your loved one. That's why the Buddha said, contemplate. All that you think you own, your loved one and all those things, they will separate from you one day when conditions cease to be. And that is for you to understand the universal characteristic. Because they are all impermanent. They go the way of nature. You cannot own anything. Like we discussed yesterday. When you are born into this world, you come empty. Lai ye kong, empty. Then when you die, you cannot take along anything. Qi ye kong. Then in between, what you do? You grieve over emptiness, anasara. Na mo si zu a, he bi ku ku a, wei kong liu lei na. Because the coming and going, the birth and death is empty, anasara. You cannot take along anything. Then in between, you go and fight, you go and crave, you go and do all those funny things. Then you cry, you grieve, you lament, you have fear and all those things. Over what? Over ultimately, empty nature. Empty phenomena. Well, everything is not real, but you can't see. You hold them in your mundane mind, thinking that they are very real. That's why you can get jealous. You can get envy, jealousy, hatred. Then like feel cheated, deceived, miserable. Who? Who get cheated? Who get cheated? Deceive. Me? You? It's your thought that tell you, anasana. That form and mind is still the form and mind. The form and mind also doesn't know that people cheat him, anasana. It's your thought that tell you, anasana. That's why you, through self-delusion, you grasp at this five aggregate of form and mind. Suffering arises. If you don't grasp, they are just beautiful aggregate. You know what are beautiful aggregate? The enlightened being. Non-grasping aggregate. Feeling is just pure feeling. That's it. That's why they can experience life. They can live life fully. Fully aware. Feeling just remain as feeling. There is no more craving. Want it this way, that way. But human being very funny. Got a lot of choice, decision. Oh, like that cannot lah. Must be like that lah. Why you do like that lah? This is how the mundane mind create disagreement, conflict, misunderstanding. But if thing is just the way it is, his life, let him decide. Your life, you decide. No more problem, is there? Otherwise, you want to control your wife, your spouse, your children. Boy, cannot study this course. Study that course. That one, better prospect. But the boy don't like that course. So what you do? You get angry. Then he said, you don't listen to me, I'm going to take action against you. Pocket money cut and handphone confiscate. I tell you, you create more misunderstanding and conflict. So, yeah, he's still a boy, he's lying, let him decide. But doesn't mean let him do what he wants. You are the parent, you have a duty to advise him, to counsel him. To let him understand. But the decision, let him make his life. So you explain all this to him. Then you do your duty correctly. Then in future, you will have parents that will never force you to do things. They will also give you the choice to decide. And which is better? The second way is definitely better. You don't want your parent to force you to do things that you don't like. So likewise, if you understand the law of karma, you will never do this to your children or your spouse. So these are the essential dhamma that you have to develop the understanding. Then you know how to live it. You know how to act properly. Then you know how to create the appropriate condition for good life, for your future to be taken care of, so that when you come with a very different karmic nature. Okay, the next one is equally important. Our lunch is supposed to be 12:30, so we still got time. Okay, I'll continue this one. The five universal law or orders, Pancha Niyamas. These are the universal law or order that governs all of life and existence in this universe. The first two are scientific law, Utu Niyama, or the physical law of nature. Then Bija Niyama, or the biological order of nature. Then the next three are spiritual law of nature, Karma Niyama, Chitta Niyama. Chitta means mind, law of the mind. Karma means law of karma. Then Dhamma Niyama is law of Dhamma, or law of truth, as taught by the Buddha. Understanding these three spiritual laws that governs all of our life and existence will give rise to the three types of important right view within the Noble Eightfold Path, as taught by the Buddha. There is right view with regards to law of karma, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil, and you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma. So this one is just a repeat, refresh, just a refreshing course for you. Then law of mind is the dependent origination of paticca samuppada. Then law of dhamma are the four noble truths, the five aggregates of form and mind, the five spiritual faculty, etc. These are the essential dhamma. Understanding these three great spiritual law is likened to understanding the secret of life. It will give rise to the wisdom to enable you to truly live life. Having this right view will lead to the understanding of non-delusion, non-attachment, non-grasping, and non-clinging, etc. Hence, you are able to free and liberate your mind from all suffering. That's why these three right views are very powerful, very important. Then there is another aspect of the teaching. This Pancha Niyama can also be explained by the four aspects of Dhamma as explained by Ajahn Buddhadasa. Ajahn Buddhadasa is a very famous monk in Thailand. His way place is called Suan Mok, Garden of Liberation, somewhere near Surat Thani. He is my teacher's teacher, Acharyantra's teacher, Ajahn Buddhadasa. He wrote some very good book. He said the four aspects of Dhamma is this. The first is, within nature, there is this nature. We got Mother Nature. That is the first aspect of Dhamma. The second aspect is there are laws that governs nature, means the Pancha Niyamas. Then he said the third aspect of Dhamma is you must do your duty. You must perform that duty towards this law of nature. You cannot violate, like law of karma. You violate, you get into deep trouble. Law of mind also same. Law of truth also same. You go against, you get yourself entangled. You get into problem. If you do that, he said, the fourth aspect of Dhamma will arise. You will reap the fruit of one's hard work. When you perform that duty very well, having performed that duty, you will reap the fruition of what you have developed or cultivated. That's why the enlightened being of the Buddha, one of their requisite or prerequisite for enlightenment is of dutiful conduct. You remember? They do their duty in accordance with nature's law. That's why they have this right duty. And my teacher Ajahn Chah always say, right duty is right dhamma. Dhamma means dhamma. So when you have right duty, means you have the dhamma. You understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. Otherwise, you neglect. You think this form and mind not real, then you don't care. No. When you live life in the conditioned world, existential world, this form and mind is subject to karma. You cannot play a fool. You still have to abide by this existential law. Law of karma and all this pancha niyamas. So this is what the teaching is all about. Eh? Then we move on to the next page, page 7. This one is to teach you the essential dhamma, the three evil roots, or three poison, or greed, hatred, and delusion. Do you know why the Buddha said these are the three evil roots? Greed, hatred, and delusion. Huh? Why are they called evil root? Huh? This one also you don't understand. I don't know how to teach you. Why are they called evil root? Use the mic. Come, somebody try. Queenie. Luckily you got Queenie.
Because all these actions will lead to ungood results, and we will be not doing the right things.
Yeah.
All are not wholesome.
Correct, yes. Okay, I will help you a bit. Your answer is actually not bad, but it is not so direct. You see, the reason why the Buddha called them the evil roots means they are roots of all evil. When you have greed, when you have hatred, when you have self-delusion, you become an evil person. You understand, right? That's why it's called the three evil roots. And sometimes they call it the three poison. San tu. You know why? Poison, you eat how? What happened? You die there. But you say, I got evil root, I didn't die. Right? Why you say three poison? Because it kills you spiritually. Understand? Right? Spiritual death. Oh, you still think, oh, I didn't die. Huh? I can go and use the evil root. You're crazy. Spiritually, you are as if dead. That's why they are the three evil roots or three poison. Take, for example, hatred, anger, deep resentment. If you have it in your heart, do you think you will become a good person? You become very evil, yeah, because of anger, the hatred, the resentment. What you do? You become evil, yeah. You want to take revenge. You hate that person. And is that happiness? That is suffering, isn't it? That is evil, isn't it? It will condition you to violate your precept, isn't it? It's an evil root, root of all evil. Make you into an evil being. That's why you are no more a human being. You become an evil living being. So this is what evil root is all about. Then poison means what? When you hold on to this anger, this hatred, this deep resentment and unhappiness, it will kill you, understand? And do you know a lot of people, because of anger and hatred towards their parent or their loved one or somebody very close to them, their spouse and all those things, they become so miserable, afflicted. That's why it's a poison. You hold this anger, hatred, and resentment in you, your life becomes miserable because your thought constantly, non-stop, think of that guy or that person. Then the anger, the hatred is the conditioning evil that make you evil, very unhappy, miserable. That's why the Buddha say, be mindful of this evil root. They are root of all evil, make you evil, cause your karmic downfall. They also can kill you spiritually, so you have to wake up. And greed is not just greediness. The Buddha's meaning of this evil root is loba. You know what is loba? Not the loba you eat. Lobha is possessiveness is also part of greed, lobha. Where we use the English word, sana. Whatever that has positive craving, clinging, attachment, and grasping is under this evil root of greed. Like your possessiveness, your covetousness, your desire, your lust, your greed, your attachment, your clinging, your grasping, your craving. When you hold on to something strongly. So all of your selfishness, your conceit, emotion, and all those things, these are part of the evil roots of greed, even possessiveness and all those things. So it's a wide range thing. So you have to be very mindful when you cultivate, because these are evil roots, make you evil. The moment you are possessive, you are gone. The moment you are greedy, selfish, you are gone. Because you will break the precept. Who will steal? Who will misappropriate things? Yeah? Greedy person, is that? Selfish person, is that? Sometimes because you are selfish, you can kill, you can harm. You can do all those funny things. That's why it's the root of all evil, make you evil. You have to understand it this way. You don't just like them, like you study Dhamma, like knowledge, like that. Ask you, what is the three evil? Greed, hatred, delusion. But you don't understand what is greed. Understand? You don't understand what is the meaning of this evil root. So like the evil root of ill will or hatred. In Pali, it's called dosa. You know what is dosa? Malay word. You commit sin. So that one more meaning. Sinful. Execute. Oh, sorry. Sinful evil root. Means when you got anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, deep resentment, dislike, unhappiness. So all these are evil root. Root of all evil. Make you evil. Can cause your downfall, can kill you spiritually. So you must be mindful of all this. When you have this anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, you become evil. So why do you hold on to all this evil root and make you evil? You're supposed to be mindful. Then what do? Right effort to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action. What are wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action? Thought, speech, and action that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And this is what cultivation is all about. How many of you all really go into all this cultivation? You don't cultivate this way, you cannot root out your evil root. You cannot root out your delusion. You hold on to knowledge, and you don't know how to cultivate. Because you never go deep into it. You never contemplate and reflect into all this evil root. And the book also never teach you this way, never write this way. Then what is delusion? In Pali, it's called moha. My Cantonese word moha, that one is different. This one is really self-delusion, moha. Moha. Moha is self-delusion. When you attach and cling to this five degree of form and mind, thinking that they are real, to the human form and mind, the human being, thinking that they are real, that is self-delusion. Because you think this is self, this is you. That's how you become an evil root. So the moment that self arises, what happens? Yeah? The personality arises, isn't it? You become like real, isn't it? When there is this me and the I, then what happens? You can become selfish, isn't it? Possessive, isn't it? That's how the evil root come. Without the self, the personality, the egoic mind, selfishness, possessiveness, anger, hatred cannot arise. Where you think you exist. That's why this one become possessive. Greedy. It wants to own things, want to possess things, want to have things. That's why craving arise. Then when things don't go his way, he get angry, emotional, jealous. This is how the evil root arise. All because of self-delusion, sakkaya-ditti, the egoic mind. And because you cannot see this, that's how living beings entangle themselves. That's how the mundane mind attach, cling, and grabs to the phenomenal world, thinking that it's real. And this is the aspect of Dhamma that people didn't teach. That's why it's very difficult for you to penetrate all this. This retreat, I want to drive in the point that you really understand, so that you go back, you become a different cultivator. You really see for yourself all the important, essential Dhamma teaching that the Buddha really teach. And this is the real teaching that the Buddha teach 2,000 years ago. Not just knowledge, understand? A lot of the Buddhist teaching now become like general knowledge, understand? They got Pali exam for you, understand? They just quote the word, understand? But the practice, the cultivation, the understanding of the teaching is all hardly available anymore. Yeah. You have to go already. Oh, yeah, 15 minutes. I forgot. Okay, I give you the 15 minutes. Sorry, we have to end here. Okay, so I finish. Lobha, dosa, and moha. Okay, so we end here. Okay, I will let Padmasri take over because he got some announcement for you. Logistic announcement. Yeah.